Welcome everyone, and thank you very much for joining us for another episode of Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me is a very special guest, and it's the author of Surviving the Tech Storm, Nicholas Bergman. How are you today, Nicholas?
Good, excellent. Happy to be in London.
yes, indeed. And as you may tell, we are coming to you live from the Great Hoxton Hotel here in Holborn in London. And it seems to be a very, very busy Monday morning, but that won't stop us from having a great podcast. And for the benefit of our audience, I would like to give some info on Nicholas himself. And he is a futurist, technology investor, and entrepreneur. He is the advisor to the TechCast think tank in Washington, D.C. He has over 20 years of vast experience from navigating through turbulent and uncertain technology environments, and he is the perfect guide when you're trying to understand what the future will bring. So, Nicholas, thank you again very much for taking the time to talk with us today. We know you have an extremely busy schedule. But without further delay, let's get into today's podcast. So I think the first question that I usually ask any of our guests on the podcast is, what inspired you to write Surviving the Tech Storm?
Well, maybe the obvious answer is to write a book that I was actually wanting to read myself. That's one side of it. The other side is that it's actually pure luxury to be able to close the door, turn off the phone, and do some thinking about a subject that you really enjoy. And I've always been reading, discussing, maybe writing also a lot about technology, the future of technology, future of business, and the future in general. So being able to set aside some time and actually write a book, it's just more or less pure luxury to be able to do that. And I actually started off the whole process with locking myself up in a small hotel in the Swedish archipelago beginning of May last year. I was the only guest for 9 days.
Wow.
I had leftovers with the staff that were preparing the hotel for the season. And it was just an amazing thing to actually be all closed off and actually do some thinking 24/7.
Great. For me personally, it's a book that I'm very excited about. I absolutely love tech. I love discussing it. I love, you know, thinking about the future of tech. And I think many of our audience do as well. And, you know, looking at tech currently and looking at the future, you know, we've come so far in such a short amount of time. And my next question for you would be, with so many emerging and developing technologies around the world, how can we stop ourselves from having this uncertainty and, you know, knowing what will succeed, what won't succeed? How do we reassure ourselves?
Well, that is extremely hard. I mean, I've been involved in a number of tech startups and working with technology in different aspects of it. And I think the most difficult thing is the timing perspective. When should I embrace a new technology? It can be as an investor in a startup, when should we invest? When should we launch a company based on a new technology? Or it can be, if you're a large corporation, you always face the question, when should we take this technology into our organization? When should we start using it? And the timing is always of the essence here. I think that the best way to do it is actually to always stay informed. It's impossible to know everything, to read everything, to listen to everything, to get everything in, but also just fragments of that, small bits and pieces of the information flow on technology is better than nothing. So trying to stay on top, stay informed, and listen in on what's happening around you in technologies. Make it part of your daily routine. Don't let it take over your day. Don't expect to get a full perspective on stuff. But just try to get even the little pieces in. And then, when you see a new technology, when you see something that is emerging, defining the time perspective, discussing that with people in the industry, with people in outside the industry, just to get another perspective. And then as a second step, try to assess the business implications. Try to understand how that will affect your industry, your competition, your suppliers, your partners in that industry, and how that will affect your customers. Will they change their behavior based on this technology? Would you have new ways of serving them through this technology? How can you reach your customers in different ways based on this technology? And also the third part is your internal processes. How will it change your logistics? How will it change your operations? How will it change all the different ways that you perform your daily business? So these three steps, these three areas from a business perspective, trying to understand how it can actually change, that's really important. And the third part of this is, of course, how you can see and judge the uncertainty based on that. How you can judge and understand how things changes and how an uncertain environment can be a bit less uncertain based on the information that you gather. And of course it's like that you actually see maybe two major ways of doing this. One is being the one shaping the industry. If you're an incumbent, if you're a large corporation, if you have vast resources, you can be the one shaping the standards of an industry, shaping the way an industry is developing. If you're a small company with limited resources, you can try to adapt to the changes in the industry, be more agile, be quicker than the rest, and try to understand how things are changing and adapt accordingly.
Absolutely.
That's a long answer to your...
That's perfect. That's fine. Okay. That's great, Nicholas. I absolutely agree with you. I think, having the most knowledge, simply, keeping an eye out, keeping up with the times is absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. And that leads me into my next question. So technology has become part of our daily lives. You know, we use it for business, we use it in our personal life, and we've come very far in only a few years. So what is your favorite piece of tech currently? Any gadget that you love at the moment?
Well, that goes with the territory. Of course, I've always been interested in new stuff, new gadgets, and now investing in technology, speaking on technology. Of course, I have an excuse, at least back home when I talk to my wife, I have an excuse buying new stuff, and it's fascinating. It doesn't matter what kind of technology, what kind of gadget it is. My main interest is if it changes my perception, if it changes my behavior in different ways. For example, I just got this new, the iPad Pro, for example. Yeah. And it's interesting. It's lighter than my other MacBook Pro, and that's good for me, for my back, traveling a lot. What's interesting also is that after having used it now maybe for a bit more than a month, I realized that I work in a different way. I think I'm probably a bit more productive in that iOS environment compared to the Mac OS environment.
Yeah.
Down on technicalities here, but that's an interesting way how maybe my behavior changes in a good way from technology. Of course, I've had these wearables, the Nike Fuel Band, the Apple Watch, etc., and it actually makes me exercise a bit more. I walk a lot more. I change my behavior based on technologies. The latest thing I got was this NFC implant. This small chip underneath the skin of my left hand.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, and that is. I mean, people ask me why, and the correct answer right now is I don't really know why. You can put your keys there, especially, I mean, for example, when you check into a hotel, you can get your business card in there, but it's still in its infancy. So the tick is there, and it's actually looking for the killer app. It's looking for the good, productive use of this technology, and I really find that interesting in that sense. For example, now that last night I checked into the Hoxton Holborn here, I asked them if they could put my room key on my NFC chip in my hand, and first I didn't at all understand what I meant.
Yeah.
But after explaining, they said, oh no, sorry, we're not allowed to do that. And that's probably because they didn't really understand what it was. And I don't think they have a corporate policy saying that they're not allowed to do it with NFC chips. But anyway, it's I'm more driven by curiosity on how a technology changes my behavior, actually. That's the main thing.
I see. That's absolutely fascinating. I hope that they do actually allow guests to use any chips that they have in the future, hopefully.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, when you come back to the Hoxton, there you go. And that will be a great use of a new piece of tech.
I expect that next time, Hoxton.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hoxton will be tweeting to you about this, so please do get on it.
Yeah.
It's very important. So, going forward, I think a big discussion in the world of tech is AI currently. And
artificial
AI,
intelligence.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is the big one. And where is it going in the future? We've had, you know, a lot of influencers talking about how dangerous it can be, how we're not prepared for it. And others embracing it, saying that, no, it is absolutely the future. And we should be doing our best to make it possible, you know, mm-hmm. to make it exist, mm-hmm. to have this artificial conscience. What is your stance?
Well, when it comes to AI, I think it's really fascinating. AI has been around as a concept for decades, and it's been in the works for decades. It's been people have been saying that, oh, in the next couple of years, in the next decade, we will see this, we will see this. And right now, there's an explosion. We have artificial intelligence, or the embryos of artificial intelligence, the soft artificial intelligence, advanced machine learning, popping up everywhere. And we see it in areas in healthcare, like cancer diagnostics. We see it in the financial industry, in the portfolio management, for example. But we also see it in e-tailing, where companies use artificial intelligence to actually guide and interact with potential clients online, in chat environments, for example, where the user not really understands that it's an artificial intelligence you're talking to. And that is amazing. And what has happened in the past couple of years is that many companies, IBM, for example, they've opened up their artificial intelligence environment, or cognitive computing environment. So you can hook onto their open APIs and build your own applications based on their cognitive computing capacities, and then do sort of a revenue share with them. And that opens up a whole lot of new things for everyone that's interested. And I think if you do it today, you will definitely have competitive advantage over your peers in the industry. In a couple of years, that will even out, and I mean, 5 years from now, it will be a pure necessity to stay competitive. Your users, your clients, they will demand that from you, that you have some kind of cognitive computing, artificial intelligence, advanced machine learning in your offering.
Okay.
So that will definitely happen.
I see. So looking at it as a business perspective, it is absolutely vital and important that businesses realize the potential and the advantages that they can acquire by kind of embracing AI. So this is kind of a bit of a question from me personally. So we've talked about the business side, but a lot of the other side of the argument, the negative side, usually comes in the form of morality and how far can we actually go in the realms of AI before we get to, you know, self-awareness, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, we've had people like the likes of Bill Gates who have said, you know, we shouldn't be pushing it to that point. And, you know, going into the realms of sci-fi and cyberpunk and, you know, stuff like that, which obviously is very far from reality. Mm-hmm. But do you think that there is that sort of element of, you know, us as humans and our morality, and should we really be going in that direction?
Well, I think that, I mean, what I've seen from technology in the past 20 years, when I look at technology and the history of technology, there's actually no way we can stop technological development. This will happen, for good and for bad. Meaning that there will always be a drive in the scientific and technology community to develop new things, to challenge your thinking, to challenge your ideas, and to develop new things. So that's one side of it. And I think it's really... Of course, we should have a serious discussion around any new technology, AI included. And I think we should not let corporations or politicians decide on which technologies to embrace and which to limit. We should be, take an active part of that. We should be informed. We should be curious about it. We should form our own opinions about what we want technology to do. We should not let that in hand, put that in hands of... someone else. I think that's something that's really, really important in this discussion. When it comes to AI, I just the other night I saw this Ex Machina again, about an AI robot running insane, more or less. And it's interesting how that works. It's an interesting philosophical discussion in that film, for example, on what we. How we relate to artificial intelligence, how we should limit it, and of course it's really, really important to discuss this, and it's somewhat tricky because I think it was Stephen Hawking saying that this is going to be the greatest achievement, technological achievement by man, and it might also be the last, he said. And yeah. And of course there's something in there, and when I listen into some of the most experienced researchers in this field, not that there's 100% consensus, but I think that the most of them actually see this as something good, and we just need to find the best limitations of this, how to control it in the best way possible. Of course, if you remember the Unabomber,
yes,
Theodore Kaczynski, if you read his manifesto, it sort of makes sense. What is that? 15 years ago. And he's not that... When you read that manifesto, it doesn't appear that crazy. I mean, then he went away and killed a lot of people based on that manifesto.
Right.
That's a different story. But reading that manifesto, parts of that manifesto actually makes some kind of sense. And that whole discussion is really, really important. We have to be aware of the potential pitfalls. We have to understand that this might go in the wrong direction, meaning that us as individuals, as corporations, and as society need to discuss this openly to find the best common way going forward. I think that's really important. But also interesting is to say that 20, 30, 40 years from now, I'm curious about seeing if robots and artificial intelligence are going to see us as interesting conversational partners, they're going to see us as pets, or if they're just going to see us like we see ants today, something annoying that we don't really have to care about. I mean, and it's all in the making right now.
I would hope it's not the last one.
No.
By far. Okay, coming back to business and tech and business. So we've seen a rise of startups in recent years, a lot of tech startups, outside of, you know, the usual suspects, which is, you know, Silicon Valley and co. With so many of them popping around, do you have any advice for tech startups on how they can embrace new technology in their business models?
Again, I think the timing perspective is of the essence. It's like the most important thing for a startup or for a large corporation. I think it's really, really important to understand where technology is, when a breakthrough is expected, when you see some, to try to find a time perspective when it gets on the radar, when it takes off, when you see mainstream adoption, and all these aspects of it. Because I've been in so many ventures where we have had the timing wrong, and when we get the timing right, you usually get a lot of other things right as well. So the timing perspective is, of course, really important. If it's a startup, you usually base your whole existence on a specific kind of technology. So you're very focused on that technology, meaning that you bet everything on that technology. But on the other hand, you're also hopefully quite knowledgeable about that specific technology, meaning that you can assess when the timing is right and act accordingly. But it's also kind of tricky, because as a startup, if you're working with one specific technology and you bet on that technology, you also live and die based on that technology, meaning that if you realize that you get the timing wrong, it's also very tough to cut your losses and start over again, do something else, and close down. There's a lot of emotions in this as well. Simple answer is stay informed, stay on top of things, and be wary of the time perspective in this, because it usually takes longer than you expect.
I absolutely agree. I think that timing is vital. I mean, in my opinion, I think a good example of this would be the handheld tablet market that we had, which I remember, you know, back around 2003 was emerging. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, desktops at the time were simply, you know, too prevalent in offices and in home use, and it didn't take off as it did, you know, in recent years with the iPad, and then, you know, Samsung and other companies following suit and creating all these, you know, wonderful gadgets that we use in everyday life. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to exactly what you said. It's all about the timing and making sure that you have a broad perspective of what you're trying to do and how your tech can be applied. Mm-hmm. And my final question for you, Nicholas, is the one I ask all of our guests on the podcast, is what books are you currently reading?
Oh, currently reading?
Yes.
I read a lot. Especially read newspapers, magazines on tech, on business technology, on art, design, architecture, which is one of my favorite areas of interest. When it comes to literature, I actually read a lot of science fiction. I'm a great science fiction fan when it comes to books, when it comes to movies, everything. And that probably goes with the territory as well. Science fiction writers, Neil Stephenson, Peter F. Hamilton, Ramiz Naam has done some great work lately. And when it comes to technology, I have a couple of interesting books. One is Super Intelligence by Nick Bostrom. It's an interesting, more philosophical perspective on the future of technology and AI, of course. One that I read a while back ago was The Race Against the Machine, Eric Brynjolfsson, Andrew McAfee. And they also wrote The Second Machine Age lately. That's also really, really interesting for those of you who want to see what will happen with the future of work, for example. Ed Catmull from Pixar wrote a really good book on creativity. And then I also saw at the South by Southwest conference last year, I think it was, I saw Dan Ward. He's been writing some really good books on innovation, and one called Fire, and one is called The Simplicity Cycle. It's really, really interesting. And then, of course, I like the occasional biography. This the last one about Elon Musk, really interesting. Walter Isaacson wrote about the innovators of Silicon Valley. It's a great book. Trying to get some different perspective on things. But usually when reading books for me, I try to read the fiction. I read more fiction than non-fiction when it books. And for the non-fiction reading I do, it's mostly through newspapers, magazine, research reports, and all the dry, somewhat boring stuff from nature, science, and the natural sciences, for example.
Great. And with that, I would like to thank you, Nicholas, very much for taking time of your busy schedule to join us today. If you would like to know more about Nicholas and surviving the tech storm, you can always find us at www.litpublishing.com and on any social media websites as well. We can be found at Lit Publishing. And of course, you can find Nicholas at www.nicholasbergman.com with links to all of his social media profiles and information about his career and the book as well. Thank you very much for listening.